Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. This morning is Sunday, November 19th, 2017. And we will begin with the prayer, which will be read by Wendy this morning.
Mrs. Eddy's prayer, given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. Oh, my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be the only true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure until the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And miscellaneous writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Next week, Betty will be reading. Is that right, Betty?
Yes.
Do the prayer. Good. Okay. Before we begin, I thought I would mention one thing. A few days ago, maybe a week or less, Parthens informed me that there has been quite a plague in the country of Madagascar. Now, I hadn't heard on it anything about it. I Googled it and found it, but you see, our country's been so fixated on all these sex scandals and other things. But I know you're all working generally, but and when he sent this to me, it was quite a dire picture. They were saying that they were worried that the antibiotics weren't going to work, and it was something that we all, as Christian Scientists, need to be working on. But this morning, I decided to check it again, and they said it is much better, that there's been nothing in 3 weeks. And so it seems to be coming under control. But I would say to all of you, this is our work. We wipe these beliefs out. They are beliefs. Parthen spoke to it in a way in his forum, where he talked about the enlargement. It's what are you enlarging? When you hear reports like that, if you're full of fear and, oh, my gosh, it's going to spread, because that's what it was sounding like earlier, and you're enlarging the error, and instead of enlarging the power and presence of Almighty God, which is all there is. And then this lesson speaks to it because it talks about every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And we know Eustace's article on germs, maybe that'll go back on the carousel, but anyway, if God created it, it has to be good. And there's no such thing as a contagious disease. But we need to be knowing this and in our work, and I trust you all to be working daily on many issues, but this is certainly one, because this is one that would try to invoke fear, and it can't be done. So we will put the total kibosh on it. God never said it. We don't have to have it. No one does. And the presence and power of God are with those people right now, and He is all there is, as our watch last night said.
Yeah, I'd like to say on that some of the headlines on that are just, like, really scary. And so when I was looking at them and reading it, and it just says something, think about the way these articles are written. You start reading it and it starts saying, well, if it mutates or if it does this, then it could do that. So they first grab you with something that is so shocking and scary. And then you start reading it, and it's like, well, that's not really true. It's pure speculation. If this happens and this happens and this happens, then it could be that bad.
Yes.
So I just want to tell you, the way they're written is to get you very fearful, grab your attention.
And then it comes up with theories that it wants you to think are law. And if you don't, if you know that they are mere theories and false to begin with, then you don't buy it.
Thank God for Mrs. Eddie saying nothing, saying nothing.
Yes.
Nothing, saying nothing.
Yes.
Right, and when it has shouted its loudest, it has said nothing.
And I know when that Ebola thing came out, I gave you all the assignment to wipe that out. And, of course, you never hear about that anymore.
The Zika virus, I heard that during this past summer, there wasn't any.
Oh, good. So I wondered about that. Because they don't ever report on that. You just you just don't hear. So I remember giving you that assignment, too. Well, now we have this assignment. And
it's because the human mind doesn't understand how it could be destroyed. It only gets fearful when it appears in front of its eyes.
And that's how it operates. It feeds on fear. So many times in the Bible, the instruction is to fear not. And that is the sound advice.
Yes.
And that's why we have our Wednesday testimony meetings, to broadcast the destruction of the error.
Such a great word, destruction. I was looking for somewhere, and you probably all know it, but Mrs. Eddy says the definition of animal magnetism is getting a belief started, and then you get everyone fearing it, and then a law, then people seem to experience it, and then a human law is made. But you see, it's all belief in the fear building on itself. So we destroy that sense of fear, Bruce was saying. And it's a major point that Parthens brought out about he was speaking about Psalm 4:1. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. So we become enlarged on the side of God. We dwell on his power and presence. You don't read these reports that are trying to scare you and put it into your consciousness. Can't be done. And then he quotes from, I think it's miscellaneous writings, human opinions have not one feather's weight in the scale of God. And that's what Florence was saying. It's nothing talking about nothing. So Zeddy says, human opinions are valueless. And that's all that this is. So, okay, any other comments on that? All right, well, the golden text, Psalm 139. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. I think that goes well with what Elizabeth wrote on the forum, which I'd like to have her read, which was Acts 27:23, Paul saying, for there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am, and whom I serve. Elizabeth, do you have that?
Yeah, I do. I just love Paul. I'm in awe of him for what he was and what he became, so it just struck me. So when I looked it up, this was from McLaren's exposition.
Well, read your whole blog if you have it.
Oh, okay. A simple but powerful statement by Paul. It shows complete devotion, yielding, obedience, and worship to God. It got me thinking, can I say this and mean it? A good thing to think about when I get up in the morning and throughout the day. From McLaren's Expositions. God had claimed him for his, and he had yielded to the claim. I am thine is the deepest thought of this man's mind and the deepest feeling of his heart. And that is godliness in its purest form, the consciousness of belonging to God. You want me to continue?
Yes.
His purpose was to represent how, as his whole inward nature bowed in submission to, and was under the influence of, God to whom he belonged, so his whole outward life was a life of devotion. He was serving him there in the ship, amidst the storm and the squalor and the terror. His calmness was service. His confidence was service. The cheery words that he was speaking to these people were service. And on his whole life, he believed that this was stamped, that he was devoted to God.
That is absolutely beautiful. And perhaps we should all begin our day with that. Do we feel ourselves that we are belonging to God and that all that we do is in service to Him? I'm sure our days will be much better. They're powerful words. And think, you know, we do have the angel of God. There stood by me this night, the angel of God. We have talked about in Martha Wilcox, her article on angels. And what does she say, Carol? What does Mrs. Wilcox say about angels? Oh, no.
Well, one thing she says, they are always with
us. Yes. You all better read that article, for heaven's sake. Goodness me.
I know in my life, at night, there's a lot of times when I felt the presence of the angel of the Lord with me. Certain things were happening and going on in the house, and just feel this sense of peace within yourself. No matter what's going on around you, you know that you're safe and protected.
Yes, thank you, Luann.
I think of the quote from Mrs. Eddy, the angels of his presence, which have the holiest charge, abound in the atmosphere of mind. And I think of that, and I think of angels' protection.
Thank you. Thank you, Fairley. Yes, and Mrs. Eddy's definition of angels is wonderful, and Martha Wilcox refers to that. I'm not sure we've turned it into an article. I think it's part of the power of a right idea that I'm referring to about angels. But no, she says it's an everyday occurrence, that they're always with us. But are we aware of them? Are we grateful for them? It's a wonderful article. These things, you know, when you read them and you live them, you don't forget them. They're part of you. I call it part of your arsenal. So that should be part of your arsenal, to know this. You know, so many scientists do not reap the blessings that they could because they're not living it. They're not awed by it. Don't make it some routine thing. So here we have this angel. Do you know that there's an angel standing you, the angel of God, stood by me this night, whose I am and whom I serve? When I first read that years ago and I realized what it meant, I was like Elizabeth. I was just floored over it. So, make that yours. And then think about, that was so beautiful, about how everything he did was in service. And if that is why he could shake the vipers off his hand without flinching. He didn't just conjure that up at the last moment.
So ask yourself, how much of the time do you actually feel the angel of God with you? Not just read about it or think about it, but actually feel it. Luann felt the angel presence. at a time when she needed it. We've all needed it. I think most of us, probably all of us, have felt it. Times of need. Paul was feeling it pretty much all the time. He was out there in that storm and under persecution, and his life was in danger every day.
I use this prayer of the angels, for the definition of angels, every day in praying for protection for my family and for others.
It is wonderful. Do you have it, Carolee, that you can read it, Mrs. Eddy's definition? I mean, she says it's spiritual intuition, pure and perfect. This is our spiritual sense. That's what angels are.
Yeah, I don't, but I say the angels of his presence have the holiest charge. They are bound in the spiritual atmosphere of mind. They're forms we know not, but we know they're allied to God's nature. And blessings are typified are the substance, I'm just paraphrasing, of faith and spiritual understanding.
Thank you very much. And from the glossary.
This is Eddie's definition, angels. God's thoughts passing to man. Spiritual intuitions, pure and perfect. The inspiration of goodness, purity, and immortality, counteracting all evil, sensuality, and mortality. So as Christians, we should be feeling their presence as much as possible.
And if you abide in that state, how can sickness approach you? How can danger approach you? How can it? How can anything untoward, accident, anything? It can't. But it's an if you abide in that state. And Gary mentioned the afflictions of Paul. And, you know, when we are afflicted, we are much more apt to be what?
Receptive?
Yes.
And seeking.
Seeking, reaching out. You know, I know there have been times I've read things in Science and Health that I haven't really understood or sunk in. But when I'm in a bad state and I'm reaching out for God's word, they come alive. And, you know, the two watching points, we had the one on our carousel and also one that Ray mentioned. Hers was number 178, and she mentioned the value of affliction, because otherwise you're tempted to just want to use your science to get comfortable and go to sleep, which is also a ploy of the devil. But when you have affliction, you don't sleep, do you? You can't.
It moves you on.
Yes. So that is the value of affliction. It moves you on. And she was expressing gratitude for 3 months of affliction she had. I am always grateful for all the affliction that I have. It caused me to grow.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so glad I'm at this church.
Well, and that's
why.
You
can have
really, it's true.
And that's why so much of the Sermon on the Mount is Jesus warning his disciples of this very situation, that they were going to experience affliction and use it as an opportunity to get even closer to God. And don't be afraid of it.
Well, isn't that in our watch this week?
It is.
So when things aren't going well, that is kind of like pushing us away from God, because that's how it makes us feel. But it's really what we should be doing is using that to draw closer to God, so we work harder.
Thank you.
Exactly.
I was going to ask that question, and Tom actually read the watching point.
Well, it's very much like the watch we had a while back about skating on thin ice. You know, so the ice is very thin, you know, then skate harder to get past it. So in this case, we have some sort of issue or difficulty. We work harder to get closer to God or skate faster across thin ice.
Yes. Yes. So you turn what would seem to be an adversity into a great blessing. And this doesn't mean that you're just constantly afflicted or that we are, you know, like those who just love tragedy and they're martyrs.
Misery.
No. No. And you should get past it. You should grow from it. This says, I'm not suggesting you be afflicted forever. But if you've really grown from the affliction, it will put you in a different place. And your life will be so much more peaceful, joyful.
And you'll have that much more to offer others in terms of instruction and example.
Begin to feel the dominion. It's quite something.
You do.
Yeah.
Another thing that's helped me is when I've been afflicted, it makes me more sensitive to the needs of others. Because if I know I've been through it, then I can be of more use for others. However, if I've never been through it, I can make some kind of callous judgment, just skip over it and put a stone on somebody else's heart who may be in a position of need and reaching out for something.
Thank you. And yesterday we had a wonderful Bible study, and Amanda read something about that from Virgin. Is she on?
Yeah. I am.
Okay. Shall we tell us again? And I know you put it on the forum too, but it was a very important point. Go ahead.
What I posted was, he wrote, "The most eminently spiritual men display great delicacy towards all living things. And if it be not always true that he prayeth best who loveth best both male and bird and beast, yet the converse is assuredly the fact. For the man who truly loves his Maker becomes tender towards all the creatures his Lord has made. And gentleness and kindness, our Redeemer, is our model." And then he goes on to say, "He who dwells in God has a great heart which encompasses all creation." And I just love that. And what I spoke of is ensuring that extends towards not just animals, which in my particular case is easier to do than with mankind. And that when you truly love your Father, when your heart is focused on Him, you can't also not love all that He created, which is all being, and has to include all man. And what I had been working with last night is, I've always loved the idea, and it's in Science and Health, of how it's how Jesus healed, how Mrs. Eddy healed, is by beholding the perfect man and not having to deal with that matter, body, personality, whatever seemed to be. And she says something similar in Science and Health, but I love the way it's worded in Lessons of a Seventh Day, where it says, "The resurrection is seeing the real man that never was in matter. He never was sick to be made well. That was the way I did the healing. I never saw a material man before me, but the real man, perfect. And this healed instantaneously, and no relapse. This is the way Jesus healed. Jesus read the mind of his students. He saw their sins, but did not believe it was their minds. And this did the healing." And so I thought about that in terms of when we see, of course, not just a creature, but a person, and whether it be a physical condition they're dealing with, or they just seem to be a growling, snarling person, to remember how they healed, to behold the perfect man that they could see through, that doesn't appear to be in the matter form.
Thank you. Do you know what page that was on Lessons of the Seventh Day?
Yes. It's on page 130.
That was beautiful. Exactly the truth. And it goes, let's Bruce was saying, is after you're afflicted, you have a greater sensitivity for the afflictions of others. And for all creatures, great and small. You know, I heard someone else this week tell me, this is kind of out of the blue, too, that, you know, well, I love animals, but I do not like people. So, it's not that uncommon and something to reckon with, because we do have to love all of God's creations. You can't be the other way either and love people and not love all the other creatures. You have to love it all. Have a great tenderness. We aren't liking mankind. We need to ask ourselves why and what are we seeing and accepting.
And do they really love animals in the first place, or do they just think they do?
Well, and some of it is a huge cop-out, so you don't have to deal with people. Animals give you that unconditional love, or they can.
You get a love when they don't talk back.
Yeah.
They don't give you fingers to handle.
That's exactly right.
So then if it's just for man or animal, then it can be divine love, because divine love loves, just loves.
Thank you.
That's
it. That's exactly right. It's a human love, not divine.
If you've been around enough animals in your life, though, and I'm talking not just 12, I'm talking many, what you'll find is that they're just like people. Some have great spirits and others don't. And it comes back to what Mrs. Eddy said, that we need to treat all the animals and all of nature, along with all of mankind.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, anyone else on any of this? Thank you all.
I just love the way Paul just totally committed himself, because I was reading Martha Wilcox, and she says that self-abnegation, by which we lay down all for truth or Christ, is our warfare against error, is a rule in Christian Science. And how, you know, what a demonstration he did, because he refers to himself as prisoner of the Lord. It just means absolutely God in control of who I am. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
And I think it's got to be true that he felt that way.
Yes.
For many years before his conversion, that he felt strongly about enforcing what he thought God wanted. And when he realized that he had been misled, that strong desire to enforce what God wanted was of great use to God when he was properly led.
I'm sure that's true, because I actually been thinking lately that, like, with me, who I feel I am really doesn't feel a lot different from before I was here. It's just, now I'm on the right track. I've been thinking that's interesting, so thank you for
Yeah. Well, before his conversion, you know, what did the angel say to Ananias or somebody? He is a chosen vessel. It was his absolute honesty and his strong desire to do the highest right, to serve God. That was in his heart. I mean, he wasn't selfish, that, you know, all of a sudden it became unselfish.
He said, touching the righteousness which is in the law, I was blameless. But what things were gained to me, those I counted lost for Christ.
Yeah, he admitted he was misled. And he was grateful to be led in the right direction.
I like that his past didn't stop him doing the right thing.
a major lesson from Paul. And so many people, you know, get hung up on their past so they can't do anything with their present. And that's a terrible, terrible waste.
Right.
Good point again.
Yeah.
And that's the danger of pride.
And he also said, well, in that respect, he said, not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect, but I follow after is that I may apprehend that for which also I am apprehended of Christ Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
He presses for the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus, but he said, you know, I still have to move forward.
Yes.
Right. His past was, in a way, a little bit of a training for where he was going. And he had the humility not to let his past own him.
Our sign out in front of our church is, you know, every day, every moment is a new beginning, something to that effect. So you claim your new beginning, or you cling to the past. Like one of Peter's songs, he talks about that. I think it's Face the Light. Says, you know, you seem to enjoy talking about the past. You seem to enjoy it. So if you're enjoying it, okay, well then you can have a muddle. Be in your muddle, but you'll find it can end up being very painful. Ruth?
And in another one of his songs, he says, every day is new. The past has no hold over you.
Oh, thank you.
That's the treat.
Yes, and used to be me. That's one of my favorites. You did such a beautiful job. You're Peter.
I still remember that first time. We were wondering what he was saying.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he had a little mischievous grin on his face as he sang it in church the first time. And I know, I think afterwards he asked that if it was okay, and it was more than okay. It was wonderful, beautiful sentiment. And I've heard that there's going to be a movie out on the Apostle Paul, so I'll be interested if it does him justice. You know, also one of his statements that I have loved, and I can't quote it exactly, but he talks about how he was the least of the apostles, but by the grace of God, he is what he is. So. And now Florence, she wrote, and Shardy too, about the being governed by soul. And in many respects, this is what this lesson is also about. It's soul governing us, not body, matter, governing us. What was your definition of govern, dear?
I don't remember those words. Do you have it? Is it on there? I should have brought it.
That's all right.
They're kept in alignment with God.
It says to maintain the superiority, to direct, to control, regulated by authority, restrain, administer the laws.
Yeah, I like that, maintain the authority.
Yes.
You let God maintain his authority over you, or you try to tell him a few things? And then, Florence, did you want to speak to anything that you wrote about? You listed some examples of Mrs. Eddy.
Yes. It's just amazing what we've been given and we should use. I said that how wonderful to be reassured again and again with the spiritual fact that the real man, our real selfhood, is governed by God. By soul, that we need not dwell with a sense of pain. In other words, those aches and pains that cry for attention can be silenced with the fact that we are only subject to the law of spirit, not the so-called laws of matter. And then Mrs. Eddy, of course, has given us so much from page 120 of Science and Health. We have several. For matter makes no conditions for man, then health is not a condition of matter, but of mind, nor can the material senses bear reliable testimony on the subject of health. 122 says, the evidence of the physical senses often reverses the real science of being, and so creates a reign of discord. Well, who wants that, right? And then 475, man is idea, the image of love. He is not physique. He is the compound idea of God, including all right ideas, the generic term for all that reflects God's image and likeness.
Thank you. Yeah. Those are wonderful things to remember. I'm in the lesson, and I do love this. Health is not a condition of matter, but of mind, nor can the material senses bear reliable testimony on the subject of health. Okay. Matter's telling you you're sick. How do you apply this?
I am not sick.
Your health is not it's not a condition of matter. Your health is perfect in God always. Forever, always has been, and always will be. It's not a condition of matter.
Yeah, I think that conceptually, that's what we should be doing. So we've talked about this in the past. Okay, so there's some sort of issue, you're sick or whatever, then you refute it. You know, it's not true. But you can't continue to focus on that. Because when you do that, I think that's how people criticize people, member of the Boston organization. They're like insane idiot, you know? I'm not sick, you know? But the thing is, like, okay, you refute it. Then you need to move on and state the truth. And you spend the major part of your time stating the truth. And that's where your focus is.
That's enlarging. That's what Parthens is talking about. If you focus on even if you thought you're not sick, you're still focusing on a negative. You focus on that your joy is well and happy now. But remember, it's in God.
God is.
Yes, because God. Remember, it's in God. Your health is a quality of God that you express. That when I started to understand that, it just was, oh my gosh, it's so fantastic. It's not dependent on this human body. It's a quality of God you express, just like joy and peace. It's a quality of Him.
I think there's a little last step that Bicknell Young really brings out clearly, and Eustace also, that to know also that you know this truth, that God is your life, you are immortal, you are spiritual, and that this false thinking that's telling you are sick cannot mesmerize you. And he says that to say that it cannot be done, this mesmerism cannot be done, is a treatment in itself.
Thank you. Yep.
The way this works is this claim of illness wants you to look at the body and focus on it. Instead of looking into mind. Mind can't be sick. Mind is not sick. And therefore, the body is enclosed by thought. Mrs. Evans used to teach us that the body is like a horse, and you get on it and ride, and it goes whichever direction you tell it to go. So where are you focusing? On this idea of sickness? Or are you focusing on the truth? When the claim gets aggressive, you have something that's even more powerful to work with. The truth of God and man. You can get very aggressive with this idea, with the truth, because it is indeed stronger.
And that is maintaining the superiority of God over you, which was quote Shardy found. God governs man, soul governs man. You are but the humble servant of the restful mind. And you can prove it. And this is why, yeah, they say we're idiots for saying we're not sick, but when you prove it, then it shuts them up. If it's at all possible to shut the naysayers up. So then I want, before Jeremy has to go, there was also a section on the armor of light that Linda started, and the idea of nakedness.
Yeah, she had said in her post, who wants to go about their day undressed? And as soon as I read that, I was thinking about the different times nakedness was mentioned, you know, and how, you know, we certainly don't want to be, after learning all this truth, I don't want to be without it. You know, there's been a few times I've let it go, and then it's felt really awful, and I don't want to go back there. So just thinking about that and how, you know, Adam, he hid himself because he realized that he was naked, and he didn't want God to know, which is dumb. So, I know,
and you can't hide from God anyway, so... So, and we had a Bible study, at least one, maybe a few, about putting on that armor of God, the armor of light. We got into, again, what we talked about last week, radiation. When you're radiating, you can't absorb all the negativity of the human mind. That's your armor. It is an armor of light. Linda, did you want to say anything?
Well, actually, that was Suzanne that started that thought about that, and I really appreciated it because I realized if I don't have the armor light, I'm really not wearing anything. You think you have something else. One way, but you don't, unless you have that light. And for me, it just brought the more in-depth feeling for the radiation absorption article. You had helped me understand it in a deeper way, so I appreciated that.
Remember to radiate, and that's really what Tom was talking about, too. Even when you're feeling sick, maybe you don't feel like radiating, but you have to start. Joy and gratitude are two essential ingredients to any healing.
And that radiating must include that correct view of man, yourself included, wherever you go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And one of your favorite statements from the article, Fidelity, too soon we cannot turn from disease in the body to find disease in the mortal mind and its cure. In what?
Working for God.
God.
Yes. And that's the service that Paul
was
in.
Yes, perfect. That you're bringing it round. Yes, that's the service that Paul was in.
So are you too sick to actually work for God? Get busy.
That's what you hang on to. You know, that statement from Fidelity was one of the very first statements that Mrs. Evans gave me, and that was a game changer for me. No one ever quoted that. No one ever told me that. And then, believe me, I got all these ways that I could work for God. That was just one after the next. And it's not necessarily, you know, having to be here, you know, writing... doing the Liberator or writing a lesson, not necessarily. I mean, all the ways that Elizabeth read that Paul was serving. Everything he did, he was in service. But do you consider your life in service to God? Whatever you're doing. And certainly having this work is helpful because you're focusing on the truth. And we're having a wonderful, our Liberator is done, yay! And our calendar is done, yay! And the quarterly is just about done, yay! What? And forum highlights is done, yay! So all of you who have worked, and all of you have, and many of you will see your name in the Liberator, you know, with articles you've written, or actually testimonies or things you've said that we put in it. So you're all contributing, and that's wonderful. And also, along with the being naked, Colleen added about being clothed in Revelation, that clothing, which was a comforting thought, too. So
make sure you're put on the right kind of clothes.
Yeah. And think about it. You know, that's making every day devoted to God. I mean, even the way you dress in the morning, ask God what you should wear. You won't forget your umbrella if you need it when you're asking God. Ask Him for everything. What you eat. think about him, being constantly communing. He's always telling you. The spiritual intuitions are always talking to you. So listen. And I also liked what Suzanne wrote about the nature and God are one, and the natural order of heaven comes down to earth. Is there any way we can get Suzanne to speak, or maybe Linda can read it?
I think it was along with another post. Mm-hmm. It says, the consciousness of belonging to God is such a beautiful thing. I've often thought that everything belongs to God, nothing belongs to us, but didn't include myself. Thanks for bringing it home.
Well, and that was part of it, but it was this, the definitions of material law as given by natural science represent a kingdom necessarily divided against itself because these definitions portray law as physical, not spiritual. And then, therefore, they contradict the divine decree and violate the law of love, in which nature and God are one, and the natural order of heaven comes down to earth. So that is this true sense of God and nature. They actually are one. And then she quotes on page 119, Mrs. Eddy says, in one sense, God is identical with nature, but this nature is spiritual and is not expressed in matter. So this is how we can go out and bless the whole world, because we are seeing God's universe in all its beauty and glory. And it is not in matter. It is in spirit. And
if you see that clearly, you're doing a great service for the world.
In heaven.
Yeah.
And heaven and nature sing.
Yes. Thank you. And heaven and nature sing. It's all one. There's not two. There's not a material universe we're trying to do away with. But there is the one, spiritual. And if we see it, we'll have infinite tenderness toward it. We will see it in its true depict as God created it. And all creatures, big and small. And with that, I'm going to have Gary. This is something I love from miscellaneous writing. Very, very beautiful, poetical. And it is Mrs. Eddy writing about sunrise at Pleasant View. The miscellaneous writing, 376.
Sunrise at Pleasant View. Who shall describe the brave splendor of a November sky that this morning burst through the lattice for me on my bed? According to terrestrial calculations, above the horizon in the east, there rose one rod of rainbow hues, crowned with an acre of eldritch ebony. Little by little, this topmost pall, drooping over a deeply dazzling sunlight, softened, grew gray, then gay, and glided into a glory of mottled marvels. Fleecy, faint, berry blue and golden flocks came out on a background of cerulean hue, while the lower lines of light kindled into gold, orange, pink, crimson, violet, and diamonds, topaz, opal, garnet, turquoise, and sapphire spangled the gloom in celestial space as with the brightness of his glory. Then thought I, what are we, that he who fashions forever such forms and hues of heaven should move our brush or pen to paint frail fairness, or to weave a web of words that glow with gladdening gleams of God, so unapproachable and yet so near, and full of radiant relief in clouds and darkness.
Now, can't you feel Mrs. Eddy's love and tenderness for all creation, that she could describe a November sunrise so beautifully?
We should all see God at work.
Yes.
that way.
So thank you all for joining us this morning. We will go on to have the beauty of our service, which will go out and heal and bless all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.